candles flicker in the middle. And here the colors are softer, blues and greens in the placemats, the cushions on the chairs. This is beautiful. My sister appears at last, wearing a simple blue summer dress with a thin white cardigan, her hair covered with a bandeau in the same blue as the tablecloth. It sets off her cheekbones and the line of her neck, but also makes no attempt to hide her scar. Her cheekbones are flushed as she comes forward to greet me, and something about her tight hug annoys me all over again. "I am so happy you're here," she says, and lets go to greet Javier. She pauses ever so slightly, and he takes her hand, kisses her cheek.
"Javier Vélez," he says, "pleased to meet you."
"Oh my gosh," she gets a little fluttery, holding his hand between both of hers. "We're honored to have you," she turns to Simon, smiling. "He's quite a famous Spanish singer."
"Is that right?"
I give Javier a quizzical glance. He shrugs a little, tips his head, as if this might be a breach of etiquette to admit to his real life.
"Perhaps a little famous in some little places."
Simon chuckles.
"I see."
Mari gives me a look, shaking her head slightly. "You should have told me your friend was a famous musician, Kit." I look up at him, feeling disadvantaged. "I forget." All three of them laugh, but Javier lifts my hand to his mouth and kisses it soundly. I should not like it, such a boyfriendly gesture, but it buoys me now.
"Which is one thing I quite like about you, mi sirenita."
The boy comes down then, Leo, and he's the spitting image of his father, and as relaxed in his skin. He has been playing video games, but makes no fuss about stopping. I wander back into the kitchen with Mari, and the smells envelop me like a blast of home. "Oh my God, what did you cook?" She smiles at me proudly, and I'm pierced by the earnestness with which she displays the meal. "Vermicelli a la Siracusana, with preserved lemons." I bend down to inhale the mingled scents, and they're so heady I'm practically dizzy. "Beautiful, like my father's." She touches my arm, the one with the tattoo. "I covered mine tonight," she says quietly. "But they will notice, little sister." I touch it, green and blue mermaid scales with a scrolly script that looks as if it were written with a fountain pen that says, "Little sister." "Friends," I say with a shrug. She nods. "Of course. But you're obviously the big sister."
"Ha, that's the joke, right?"
"Yes." Again, that accent, making her someone else. She touches my arm. "That was the first time I tried to get sober for real, after I saw you and we ate at the diner, when we got the tattoos." "Really? I didn't know that. Why?" She shakes her head, looks toward the purpling sky through the window. "You were so focused on your career. It was inspiring. You weren't letting," she takes a breath, blows it out, "everything that happened hold you back." I think of how sad I felt this afternoon, that I've never told my mother how proud I am of her. "You did it, though," I say. "I'm proud of you." She swallows and turns to the stove. "Thanks." Sarah comes into the kitchen.
"Do you want to see my experiments?"
"Sure. Do we have time before dinner?"
"Only a couple of minutes, honey," Mari says. "Don't be long."
"Sweet." Sarah takes my hand and leads me to the back door.
"Do you want to see?"
I'm so happy to have her little hand in mine. I used to do experiments all the time.
"I have some plant experiments going," she says, pointing to the greenhouse. "My papa helps me set them up. We're growing 3 different seeds to see which one grows best. And we're also growing avocado seeds in 3 different environments. And celery."
I'm startled by the sophistication she displays, her articulate descriptions.
Have you learned anything yet?
We had to throw away the fourth avocado seed because it died. They don't like salty water.
I nod and let her lead me through her barometric center and her measurements, piercingly recorded in her childish handwriting. We visit the rock crystal center and the mini greenhouse for avocado seed number 3. Overhead, rain begins to patter onto the glass roof, and I hear Mari call, "Come on, you two, before you get soaked." We both laugh and then dash for the house, our legs getting wet. At the door, she says, "You'll have to take off your shoes, otherwise my mum will get mad." I bend down to unbuckle my sandal, and she touches my hair.
"We have hair just the same."
I grin at her. "We do. Do you like it?"
"No," she says sadly. "A girl at school makes fun of me."
"She's just jealous of your amazing brain."
"Papa says the same thing."
"Papa is Simon's father," Mari says, holding the door for us. "Do you want some socks?"
"No, thanks."
She touches my bare arm again, as if I am her child. It disarms me.
"I'm so glad you're here, Kit. You have no idea how much I missed you."
"I think I do," I say, and slide away from her touch.
Chapter 27. Mari. Over dinner, I finally find a way to let go of my held breath. Kit is so tender with Sarah, and she laughs at the jokes Leo makes trying to impress her. She's dazzling, a fact I hadn't expected and should have. She has my mother's slim shoulders and robust cleavage, my father's laughter and wide smile. Together with the confidence she lacked in her younger days, it's quite a package. Both my husband and my son vie for her attention, while Sarah simply worships, rapt, at her side. As does Javier. He looks at her as if she's the sun, as if she might command flowers to bloom and birds to sing. It's clear that he's trying to hide it, to be cool, but he's smitten with her. It's less easy to read Kit. Over the years, she's created an urbane but kind shell that lets little of her true self leak through. I catch sight of the real Kit every now and again, when she listens to Sarah and she leans close, when Javier touches her arm or shoulder or pours her a little more water from the pitcher. Mainly, I see her when she engages with Simon, as if she wants to know and like him, which gives me hope. But it's also Simon who is making me fret. Every so often, he looks perplexed or surprised. In his smooth, lovely way, he nourishes the conversation, asking Javier about his music, Kit about her passion for medicine. But every now and then, he gives me a glance, a little frown. Is he looking at her tattoo? Leo notices. "Hey, you and my mum have the same tattoo." Kit holds up her arm. "One difference, though. Can you spot it?" He peers at it, frowning. "Oh, hers says big sister." He frowns. "But you're bigger." She glances at me. I wasn't always. She grew tall first, and then I did. Javier says, and I get the feeling he does it to distract from the tattoos, "I expect you're going to be quite tall one day. Do you play sports?" "Yes." He sits back down and dives into his pasta. "Lots of them. Lacrosse is my favorite, but my dad likes us to swim because he has the clubs." "Hey now, you'll give me a bad name," Simon protests, but he laughs. "You're free to give it up any time, son." He takes a slice of garlic bread from a plate. "But that will guarantee that Trevor will take the lead this season." Leo scowls. "I'll never beat him. You know I won't."
"You can do what you believe," Kit says calmly.
"You don't know how this kid swims. Everybody says he'll be going to the Olympics one day."
"He might," Simon said. "You may as well give up." Leo shoots him an evil glance and Simon chuckles. "That's what I thought."
It all goes remarkably well. Leo and Sarah clear the table while I make coffee.
The other adults settle in the more comfortable lounge, and Simon cues some music from his phone, some mid-century jazz and pop that sets a Milo stage. These are our habits, the dance we have created. When he comes into the kitchen, all feels completely normal, until he asks quietly,
"Why does this feel so stilted tonight?"
"Does it?" I look up at him guilelessly. "I hadn't noticed.
You're as jumpy as a cat. She must know a lot of secrets about you. Where all the bodies are buried?"
"Don't be silly," I wave him away. "Get back in there and entertain them." His fingers brush the top of my back and then he's gone. Laughter spills out in the other room. Leo asks if he can play Minecraft and I dismiss him. Sarah isn't finished circling the sun of her new idol, and she helps me by carrying a plate of Petit Four into the other room.
"Don't tell me you made these as well," Kit says.
"No way." Simon picked them up at a bakery on the way home. I pour in past cups of coffee. "It's decaf," I say. Sarah sits next to Kit, who says with some humor,
"Your mother was the worst cook ever when we were young."
"Really?"
Kit gives me a look and sidles her cup on the table.
"Really? Like, couldn't even cook bacon."
"Why didn't you just put it in the microwave?"
"We didn't have one," Kit says,
then recognizes her slip.
"None of us did."
"You didn't?"
Sarah echoes, wrinkling her nose. And in that instant, with the faces of my sister and my daughter mirroring each other, both with the same nutmeg curls, the same tilt of eyes, the same freckles on the same nose, I recognize there is no way this secret can be kept. Sarah is Kit's mini-me, down to inclinations and eye color. At that moment, Sarah says,
"Hey, we both have the same toes."
Kit looks at Sarah's foot, held beside hers. One short leg, one long, the same second and third toes, such a specific genetic order, webbed in exactly the same way. Kit looks up at me, touches her niece's hair.
"So we do. That's crazy."
My heart speeds up and under my hair the sweat breaks out. I look at Simon, who gives me a perplexed shake of the head. He spreads his hands.
"What is this?"
He speaks to Sarah, however.
"Sweetheart, it's time to go upstairs."
She lets go of a huff, and I think she's going to protest, but she only turns to Kit and says,
"It's adult time. I have to go. Will you come back?"
"I'll do my best."
Sarah hugs her hard, and I see how it shatters my sister, the way she squeezes her eyes tight and her fierce arms circle my child.
"It was so nice to get to meet you."
"Bye,"
Sarah says in a small voice and heads upstairs. A vast silence fills the space beneath the music as she departs. Kit glances at Javier, and he takes her hand in a protective way, moves closer.
At last, Simon says, "She couldn't look more like you."
Kit bows her head, looks at me. And here it is, the moment I must have known was coming. I've been feeling it bearing down on me for weeks, this collision of my old life and the new one. I take a breath, meet Simon's eyes.
"We're sisters."
He's bewildered.
"Why wouldn't you just say that?"
I take a breath, unable to halt the tears that fill my eyes.
"You said I could tell you anything, but..."
I look up. "This is a really long story." Kit stands up, her hands fluttering over her skirt. "We should go. This is between you two." Simon waves her down.
"Please, don't go yet. I'd like to know the story."
She hesitates, looking first at me, then toward the stair, then gives Simon a short nod. She tucks her skirt beneath her legs and perches at the edge of the couch, ready to flee at any moment. A shivery fear makes my skin cold.
"It would be better if we talked first, Simon. Seriously."
He shakes his head. I've already lost him. I can see it in the set of his shoulders and the loose, apparently relaxed way he holds his hands. He hates lying. He won't tolerate it in employees or friends, and I've known that for almost as long as I've known him, but not before I fell in love with him. Sooner or later, you have to face things. Face your life. Here is my reckoning. Okay. Short version is, my real name is Josie Bianchi. I grew up outside of Santa Cruz. My parents ran a restaurant. Kit is my younger sister. Dylan was our... I look at Kit. Third, she says. Not a brother exactly, not a relative, but our... She looks at Javier. Soulmate. Alma gemela. I don't understand. Simon blinks, as if he's trying to see through fog. Why lie about something so ordinary? Because, I say wearily, until a few days ago, Kurt and my mother thought I was dead. I swallow, meet his eyes. Everyone did. I walked away from a terrorist attack in Paris and let everyone think I died. He pales, the skin around his eyes going white. Jesus, is that how you got the scar? That was the earthquake. That's real, then? He runs a finger over his own eyebrow, a gesture that means he's striving for control. My heart squeezes. Ordinarily, I would be the one to offer comfort. Jesus. Kurt stands. I really have to go. Javier stands too, his hand on the small of her back. Kit says, Simon, I enjoyed meeting you. She turns to me and I see that there are tears in her eyes. You know how to find me. All the grief and hope and terror I've been stuffing back down into my body now rush upward, and I stand and fling myself into her arms. And for the first time, I feel her wholeheartedly grip me, loving me back. If I let even one tear fall, I will be lost. So instead, I am only trembling from head to toe. She holds me fiercely for a long time. Then she pulls back and puts her hands on my face. Call me tomorrow, okay? Don't worry, I'll still be sober. I'm not worried in the slightest. She's so tall, she kisses my forehead. And I realize in a bright, sharp moment how much time I've lost with her, how much I've deprived her of. Both of us. Can I say goodnight to Sarah? Yes, I say, before Simon can step in, and I go to the foot of the stairs to call her. She tumbles down so quickly that I worry she's overheard it all, but even if she has, we need to have a better talk before it all comes out. She halts 3 stairs from the bottom so she can look Kit in the eyes. She says, I'm so very glad to have met you. Will you write to me when you go back? Kit makes a sharp, strangled little sound. I'll do better than that. She reaches into her purse. This is one of my favorite pens. It's a fountain pen, and right now it has my favorite ink, which is called Enchanted Ocean. I'll send you a bottle and your mom can show you how to refill it.
Oh, this is lovely.
She holds it in her hands, as smitten and awed as I've ever seen her.
Thank you.
What's your favorite color?
Green,
she says decisively. I'll send you some green inks too, and you can decide which ones you like best. Sarah nods. May I hug you? Kit asks.
Yes, please,
says my polite little girl. And they do.
Please come back,
Sarah says in a small voice. It pierces me how much my daughter has wanted an ally, a person to look up to, someone like her. Has it been that way for Kit, too? Both Kit and Javier touch my shoulder on the way out. I kiss Sarah's head and send her back upstairs. I take a breath and go into the lounge to face Simon. My husband is sitting on the sofa with his hands clasped in front of him. I'm trembling as I sit down in the chair nearby, not right next to him, as I usually would. For a long time, he says nothing. The music is still playing, quiet Frank Sinatra that makes me think of my father, a piece of information that I would previously have squelched. My dad loved Frank Sinatra.
The actual father, or the one he made up? The one who was killed in a fiery crash, or...
You have a right to be angry, I say. But you don't have a right to be cruel. I raise my chin. My actual father died in the Loma Prieta earthquake. It wasn't fiery, but it was violent. He drops his head in his hands, a gesture of such anguish that I reach out to touch him before I hold it back. There are good reasons, I say quietly. I don't expect you to understand that right away, or to forgive me instantly, but in light of the fact that we have made a good home and a good marriage together, I would ask that you at least hear the truth before you make any judgments.
You lied to me, Mari.
He raises his head, and I see that his eyes are red and shimmering with unshed tears.
Or Josie, was it?
I'm still Mari. Still the woman you loved this afternoon.
Are you, though?
He makes a little sound.
You started off lying to me, and have lied to me for nearly 13 years now. Were you ever going to tell me the truth?
Slowly, I shake my head.
No.
I killed the woman I was before for good reasons, Simon. You would not have liked her at all. It takes everything I have to keep my voice from trembling. I hated her. Hated myself. The opportunity presented itself, and I just took it. I had to kill her or die.
Were you really an addict? Or was that a lie too?
No, that part is absolutely truth. It was what made me so wretched. My mother was also an addict, but Kit says she's clean now too. I look at my hands, the rings sparkling on my wedding finger. She quit when she thought I was dead. So I guess it made two of us sober. He doesn't respond. My chest aches at how much I've broken him, but I can't think of what else to say.
The thing is, he says, that we are the culmination of our experiences. You can't be Mari without being Josie, too.
He looks at me.
You can't be Sarah's mother without being Kit's sister. But I did just that. You made it all up, he shouts. None of it is true. Tofino, your dead parents, all lies. How do I even know who you are?
I bow my head and toe a spot on the carpet where a yellow flower winds around a blue wall. I know you're too angry to hear it right now, but I wish you would give me a chance to tell you the whole story. His jaw shows his immovability, his struggle for control.
I don't know.
His voice is utterly cold as he meets my eyes, and I know how those who've fallen out of favor with him must have felt. I've been cast from paradise into the wilderness, banished. And yet I see the sorrow in his eyes too, and I know how much he values self-control. He will be furious if he reveals how I've broken his heart. I make a decision. I'm going to go stay with Nan, or at a hotel or something.
What?
Give you some time to... I struggle for the right words. Sort through everything. His jaw hardens.
I'm so disappointed in you, Mari.
A blister of anger rises through my terror.
Life is not all black or all white, Simon. Your life has been so easy.
I fight the impulse to weep, to fling myself on his mercy.
You've had everything given to you from birth. You're handsome and wealthy, and your parents took really good care of you. Kit and I...
Emotion crowds my voice.
We only had each other until Dylan came.
I can't help the tears that spill over my face, but I'm not going to be weak. Not now. Not after all I've had to do to get here, to stand here.
It was not a good childhood. And yet there's Kit, who seems to have done all right. It's fair and unfair. Yes, I say, and find a place of calm. We protected her, me and Dylan, as much as we could. It wasn't always enough. Maybe he hears the despair, the loss, some hint of the reality that was my life as a child. I will listen to your story, but I can't do it right now. He's very close to tears. I can see the effort it takes for him to hold himself together. He will hate it if I witness his breakdown. I'll give you some space. Give me a few minutes to get it back. One of the hardest things I've done in my entire life, or should I say, my lives, is to go into the bedroom I've shared with my beloved husband for more than a decade and take out a bag and pack it, knowing I might not ever be back here, to keep it together for my children. I can't think about that. Not yet. I tuck into each of their rooms. Sarah has put herself to bed, as she does, and she's fast asleep, fountain pen in her hand. I kiss her forehead, lightly, so as not to wake her, turn off the lamp, and tiptoe out. Leo is still playing Minecraft. He looks up guiltily. I thought it might be all right, since you were talking with... I raise my eyebrows. He turns off the game. I'm off to bed now. Wait, I need to talk to you for a minute. I sit on the edge of his bed and pat the plaid duvet. Okay. He plops down beside me, his skinny arms brown from all the swimming he's done this summer. I'm going to take Kit down to Raglan to surf in the morning, so you guys are on your own for a few days. Look out for your sister. He nods, presses his lips together. I heard you and Dad fighting. She's your sister, right? Yeah. I'll tell you all about it when I get back. Can you wait that long? Yes. In his hands, he rolls his shirt up into a tight ball. Dad is really mad. Are you getting a divorce? I shake my head, kiss his hair. He is mad. We just have to talk things out, okay? Sometimes grown-ups have conflicts too. Okay. Love you, Leo Lion. I say. Be good. Have fun surfing. Dude. It makes him laugh, and I leave his room and go down the back stairs to the kitchen. The dogs are asleep on the tiles, and I want to take one of them with me, but that wouldn't be fair to them. Instead, I head out into the garage, toss my bag in my car, and climb into the driver's seat. And there's really only one place to go.
Chapter 28 Kit. The imprint of my niece's hands on my shoulders stays with me as Javier and I walk to the ferry. It's a mild night, with stars twinkling above the water and the dazzling lights of Auckland thinning to each side as the landscape moves into housing. I can see the waves of hills the city is built upon, each carrying its own spray of lights. This place is beautiful. I murmur. Yes, Javier says. A cocoon of quiet muffles my feelings, my thoughts, my words. I have nothing to say as we board the ferry and sit down inside, watching the dark water move by. He never pushes. He doesn't hold my hand, which I couldn't bear right now. He only sits quietly beside me. As we dock, I ask, are you singing tonight?
I could.
I nod. I'd like that.
All right.
For a moment, his eyes search my face, but instead of asking if I'm okay, he simply brushes a lock of my hair back from my temple.
She's a lovely child. It makes me wish I could have known you then.
I think of myself on the beach, digging my feet into the sand, while Dylan built a fire for all of us, and the lava in my belly gurgles. Urgently, I push the image away. I can't bear even one more teaspoon of emotion. Her experiments are wonderful. I touch my heart. I was just like that, a little odd, so passionate about the things I cared about. It makes me feel protective of her. I'm sick that my pursuit of the truth might lead to disaster for my sister. After so much time, so much effort, it seems wretchedly unfair. It's still awful that she faked her own death, but I don't know. In my purse, my phone buzzes, and I yank it out urgently, worried about what transpired once we left. It's from Mari. "Be ready to go surfing at 6 a.m. We'll be gone all day." "Sorry," I say to Javier. "It's my sister." I type, "I don't have the gear, so I need to rent." "I have access to everything. What's your board these days?" "Short board, doesn't matter." "See you at 6, in front of the Metropolitan." "Cool." I pause, then type, "Are you okay?" "No, but none of this is your fault. See you in the AM." I look at Javier. "We're going surfing in the morning." "Good." As the ferry comes to a stop, he takes my hand and pulls me to my feet. I take comfort in his grip, which feels like it will keep me from flying away into my thoughts or falling into the bubbling power of my tangled emotions, where I might be burned to cinders. "Cinders," I smile, thinking of my old dog. "I had a dog named Cinder when I was a child," I say. "He was a black retriever, and he was with us every minute of every day." "Did you have pets?" "Yes, many. Dogs, cats, reptiles. A snake once, for a little while. But he escaped, and I never saw him again." "What kind of snake?" "Ordinary. He probably lived in the garden till the end of his days." We walk up the hill toward the Spanish restaurant where Miguel plays, and I realize I've mapped out some of the routes, from ferry to apartment, apartment to market. I'd like to expand my reach, see what lies beyond the park full of magic trees, go to the other side of the bridge, see what the lights to the north are. But I suppose I'm out of time. I guess I have to get back to my real life. "So soon?" I twitch a shoulder. "My mother is staying in my house, taking care of things. I left my job without a lot of notice, and I've done what I came to do." He nods. His hand is still holding mine. Ordinarily, it feels sweaty and claustrophobic to hold hands with someone. But his fits mine better than most. I almost pull away as I think that. But it doesn't matter. I'll be leaving. Before we go into the restaurant, he stops and faces me. "If you stay a few more days, we could explore a bit together. You could have a true holiday. Enjoy getting to know your family." Light from the doorway cascades down the center of his nose, catches on the curves of his mouth, illuminates the column of his throat. "Maybe. Think about it." "Okay." When we go in, Miguel spies us and hurries over. He's wearing a turquoise shirt this time, the color making the most of his dark hair and warm skin. "Hola, hermano." They give their man hugs, slaps on the back, and then away. "You must be Kit," he says, offering me his hand. I accept his handshake. "I'm happy to meet you." In my mind are the eyes of a little girl, haunting me, making me ache. "Javier has told me a lot about you." He closes my hand between his own. "And he has told me about you, though he could never have fully expressed your beauty." I laugh at the extravagant compliment. Javier tisks good-naturedly. "Are you going to sing?" Miguel asks. "We have missed you. But of course, we do not wish for your date to run away. Was it so terrible you couldn't bear it?" "Pay him no attention," Javier says, his hand at my back. "He thinks he's clever." "I had pressing business last time," I say. "So rude. This time I look forward to hearing every word." Javier swings his arm around my shoulders, kisses my temple. "It will be my pleasure to serenade you." Is that what it will be? A serenade? His eyes go sleepy.
Every word will be words of love,
he murmurs close to my neck.
And they will all be for you.
Again, it's extravagant. But our little idyll is nearly over, so I let it slide past my barriers and settle in my blood, warming me. I lean into him and let him kiss my forehead. And only when I am settled at the small cocktail table near the stage do I see the eyes on us. Envy and curiosity and eagerness. Everyone is staring, I murmur.
Because they wish to know who that beautiful woman is with Señor Vélez,
Miguel says, giving me a wink. Then they're taking the stage, and the crowd goes crazy, whistling and clapping as Javier picks up a guitar. He lifts a hand and settles in a chair before a microphone. The two men begin to play, the guitars weaving in and out of each other, rising and falling, and I think it must be flamenco. A woman sits down next to me, slim and middle-aged, her perfume spicy in the beery room. She leans in, offering her hand. You must be Kit. I'm Sylvia, Miguel's wife. I give her a frown. You know my name? She smiles. We are his family. He talks. Ah, it makes me uncomfortable, but I take her hand, nod in acknowledgement. A waitress comes around, bringing beer and shots. Right? She asks, bending close. Ale and tequila? I'm startled, but lean close enough to say, yes, thank you. Anything else? No, thank you. She settles a glass of wine in front of Sylvia and a glass of water. It's her job to take care of the musicians and their parties, Sylvia says. And Javier is, well, himself. Himself. I glance at the stage, at the people leaning toward him so eagerly. The music shifts, and they dive into another instrumental piece. This one sounds familiar. It's exhilarating, full of thumping on the guitars and speedy transitions. I've never been a musician, but it's thrilling to watch them. Thrilling to see Javier in his natural habitat. He and the guitar are both woven of flesh and wood, and strings and notes, all coming together to create enchantment. His fingers fly over the strings, up and down, strumming, slapping, strumming some more. His hair falls on his forehead, and his foot taps on the floor. And he looks up at Miguel to see where they are, and the two dive into the next section, and I feel something in my gut, wild and deep, in tune with his strumming hands, aching and pulsing. It takes on color, a rich yellow, the color of sunlight, and it begins to spread through my body, every single part of me becoming points of light that pulse in time with his strings. It makes me dizzy and makes me feel alive. Wow, I say aloud. Sylvia laughs beside me. Yes, every time. The music rises to a crescendo, and then they fall silent. Javier tosses his hair from his forehead and begins rolling up his sleeves. He looks toward me and raises a brow. I touch my hand to my heart, and he smiles. And then, as last time, he pulls a microphone close, adjusts his guitar, and leans in. His voice is rich and full of layers, caressing the words one by one, the notes weaving in and out. I don't understand what he's saying, but I love the way he sings, earnestly, intently. He never looks at me, but I feel his attention, plucking those points of connection through my body. First yellow, now orange. Next to me, Sylvia leans over. Do you speak Spanish? I shake my head. She interprets. In the whisper of the waves, I hear your name. In the caress of the sunlight, I feel your lips. In the hands of the wind, I feel your touch. Everywhere, in everything, there you are. I will not forget you, sweet love. I close my eyes because it's almost too much. His face, his hands on the guitar. But even as I shut the visuals out, his voice weaves through me, and I see him bending over me as we kiss the first time, and his hands gliding over my body, and the way he laughs at my jokes. His song trails off, and he picks up a bottle of water to take a drink. The room erupts in clapping, cheering. Javier waves a hand, looks at me, gives me a nod. And it's like that for all the time he sings. Beautiful love songs, songs about loss, all the music plucking my heart, piercing my soul. I allow myself to fall into the flow of it, allow it to carry me away into a world that's more bearable than the one where I've caused my sister's life to come tumbling down around her, where I might well have deprived two children of a family that was, until my arrival, perfectly whole. When he finishes, I lean into his neck and say, "We don't have much time. Would you rather sit here or go back to my bedroom?" He chooses my bedroom. At midnight, I'm lying on my stomach. Javier lies next to me, tracing the dip in my spine with light fingers. Up, down, up, down. It's hypnotically soothing. "Tell me about your broken heart," he says. "This one broken heart that has kept you away from love for the rest of your life." "Oh, it's not that dramatic. I haven't had a lot of time to fall in love."
"Psht, love does not need time."
I turn my head to look at him. My carapace of protection has disappeared, and I don't even know where it is at the moment. His name was James. I met him when I was very lonely, after the earthquake. Easily, I trace the round of his shoulder, trail a finger down his biceps. He had a girlfriend, but we started working together at Orange Julius. I pause, remembering. I had the worst crush ever. I could hardly breathe when he was in the room.
"I am a little jealous," I smile.
He broke up with his girlfriend, and for a whole summer we were inseparable. We taught each other everything, really. No one was ever at my house, so we just hung out there and explored each other. On my back, Javier's touch has shifted to an open palm, moving up and down. I was so very much in love. It filled every part of me. And really, it was the first time in a really long time that I was happy. And his ex-girlfriend started threatening me. My sister heard about it, and she got into a fight with the girl. Josie broke her nose.
"Oh."
There's amusement in his voice. It wasn't funny. She was one of the prettiest girls I'd ever seen, and he chuckles, bending to kiss my shoulder. James was furious with my sister, and they got into an actual fistfight too. And that was that. We broke up. He quit Orange Julius, and when school started, he was back together with his old girlfriend and never spoke to me again.
"He was a pig, that one."
"No, I think that was you, wasn't it?" I turn, teasing him. He laughs, sliding his hand around my ribs.
"But I was never so cruel."
"No," I say quietly. I suddenly and urgently wish I could stay right in this room forever. I pat his stomach. "I like your tummy."
He laughs. "In the winter, there is more of it. You wouldn't like it so much then."
"I think I would still like it." He sighs sadly, pats it.
"That fat little boy is always ready to take over. I might be a fat old man someday."
I place my hand on that belly. Soft over the muscle beneath. Still.
"You can find out how it looks in the winter, if you wish."
I look away. He touches my chin and slides down so that our faces are close. I can see the way individual lashes grow and the flecks of gold in his dark eyes.
"So your heart was broken, and you cannot bear to let anyone in now."
It wasn't just that. It was everything.
The earthquake and my dad and Dylan. All of it. I know. He leans in to kiss me, gently, and pulls back. I need you to listen for 1 minute without saying anything in return. Something flutters in my chest. You think I am only flirting when I say that you are the most beautiful woman I have ever seen. But I am not. It is not extravagance. It is not a way to get you in my bed. Though I see that it may have been a good tactic. I need to remind you that this is my bed, senor. Well, either way, he touches my mouth. When I saw you, I recognized you. Like I've been waiting all this time for you to show up. And there you were. My heart aches. We live on different continents. Yes. He bends and kisses me, longer this time. And I find myself kissing him back. But I think you have also found feelings for me. I take a breath. And for once in my life, I am honest. Yes, I have. I might actually have been falling in love a little bit. Have been? I'm leaving in a few days. That is true. He kisses my throat, and flutters move elsewhere. Unless I convince you that you should stay longer. Burying my hands in his hair, I pull him closer. You can try, I suppose. I find myself memorizing the feel of him, his shoulder blades and the tip of his ear, his voice in my ear, murmuring in Spanish, the feel of his thighs between mine, the taste of him on my mouth. For remembering, later.
Chapter 29. Mari. I drive to Sapphire House, which draws me like a siren. I've never been there at night yet, and the view is astonishing, even more magical than I imagined. Standing on the bluff, looking over the glittering spread of the city, I think of the day Simon brought me here the first time. My husband, back when he adored me and bought me a legendary house. A hole tears in my heart as I think of it. I let myself into the dark, empty rooms. I turn on lights as I go, trying to bring in warmth, but it's just so very empty. I'm never alone at night. My family is always with me. Is this how it will be, going forward? The possibility is agonizing. I had no idea how much I needed and wanted a family, or how good I would be at it. On the kitchen, I set the kettle to boil and lean against the counter, waiting. The light in here is green and unpleasant. And one of the things I want to install is better, warmer lighting. Did Helen not mind it? I think of her here with Paris and Toby, alone in the giant house for decades and decades and decades. Why did she stay? Why not sell the house and find some more appealing bungalow somewhere? There'd have been plenty of money. It's the first time I've thought about it, and now I wonder why it hadn't occurred to me sooner. Was she hiding something? Doing penance? Carrying my mug of tea to the lounge, I let myself out the French doors and sit on the deck. The sound and smell of the sea ease the tension in my neck. What a disaster. Had I really believed that I'd get away with it forever? Yes. I mean, why not? And yet, now that it's all out in the open, I'm relieved. Everything in my life is turned upside down, but I can finally tell my real story. The people I love can know me, on both sides of the line. The people who knew Josie, and by that I guess I mean Kit, and the people who love Mari. Sipping my tea, watching the half moon skim the surface of the water, I try to imagine how Nan will take it. Gwyneth. Mom. I've carried a torch of hatred for my mother for so long now that it's hard to even see beyond the straw woman I've made of her. With moonlight and sea wrapping me in the same light as childhood, I remember another side of her. The one who so tenderly took Dylan in, who gave that lost boy a home. It's startling to realize that she was younger than I am now when all that was happening. I was born when she was only 21, so she wasn't even 30 when Dylan washed into our world.
the sexy young trophy wife of a much older man. Leaning back against the wall, I wonder what that must have been like. My father was almost 15 years older than her, and at first, totally obsessed with her. When had he started taking lovers? When did she find out? It makes me sad. Out of nowhere comes a memory of when I was only 4 or 5. My mother and I sat together on the vast patio of the restaurant and watched the ocean. She sang to me, a ballad about a mermaid who warns sailors of a shipwreck. A knot in my chest aches as the vision unspools, the waves crashing, the quiet moon, her voice and her arms around me. Mama.
The day of the earthquake, we were in downtown Santa Cruz.
She bought me ice cream, not because I liked it, but because she did. I was stunned and sad, my uterus cramping after the violent cleansing it had just undergone, and she was uncharacteristically silent.
"Are you okay?" she asked at last.
I shook my head, fighting tears.
"I'm so sad."
She reached over and took my hand.
"I know, sweetie. I am too. One day, when the time is right, you'll have babies, and I'll be a grandmother who spoils them rotten."
The pounding ache in my chest spread through my body, pulsing hard in my throat with an almost unbearable pressure.
"But this one..."
"I know, sweetheart, but you're barely 15. And that was when the earthquake started. It wasn't like we'd never experienced one before, but you could hear this one coming, rumbling beneath the surface of the ground, coming toward us. The first wave hit the building with a slamming bang, knocking cutlery and glassware and baked goods from the counter onto the floor. Almost at the same second, the plate glass window next to us shattered, and my mother grabbed my arm and yanked me violently out of my chair to haul me toward the door. Before we got there, the ceiling started falling down, crashing around us, and a big chunk smashed into my head, knocking me down. My mom's hand was ripped out of mine, and I screamed for her, feeling like I would faint, like my heart would stop beating. She bent down and hauled my arm around her neck.
"Hold on!"
She dragged me to my feet, and we staggered outside, but even there it was loud, and people were screaming, and things were breaking, falling, groaning all around us. Blood spilled into my eye, and I pressed a hand to the throbbing spot on my head. It was a big cut, and blood was soon leaking down my arm. My mom was holding on to me, hard, as the world shook itself apart around us. It was violent and loud, and I was trying not to pass out. It seemed like it went on and on and on, though later they said it was only 15 seconds. When it finally slowed to a stop, my mom let go of holding me so tightly as she looked around. She said,
"Jesus wept,"
and I had to see too. The air was filled with dust and debris, making it dark, and it looked like a bomb had hit, with the front of buildings crumbled into individual bricks on the sidewalk. One building looked like it had imploded. People were crying and somebody howled, and I saw a man who was so dusty he looked like he'd walked into an exploding bag of flour. Alarms were going off. I smelled gas. My head hurt loudly, with a noise to it, and the blood dripped to the ground from my elbow. A woman hurried over and tugged off her sweater.
"Sit down before you faint," she ordered, and pressed the sweater to my head. "Mom, you need to sit down too." "Oh my God," my mom cried, and she was literally crying, shaking so hard that when she reached for me, it made me think of the shivering of the earth, and I moaned, ducking away. She sank down beside me.
"You need to go to the hospital."
"We need to call Kit," I cried. "If it was this bad here, what happened at Eden?"
Panic squeezed my lungs so hard that I couldn't catch my breath, and I grabbed my mom's wrist hard.
"Kit!"
"I will. I will." Mom stood up, stared around her, looked at me.
"You're bleeding so badly, I don't want to leave you."
The woman lifted the sweater.
"Yep, you're going to need a bunch of stitches. Can you walk?"
I tried to stand up, but another wave of noise and shaking overtook us, knocking me down. Someone started screaming again, in little bursts.
My mom was on her hands and knees. The hospital is too far away. We need to call an ambulance.
Every ambulance within 100 miles is going to be busy.
Let's just stay here. They'll be down here soon enough.
The woman had the air of someone who was used to getting things done. She hesitated, looking around us, then sank down beside me.
You're right.
A roar filled my head.
Kit and Dad, we need to call them.
Yes, right. I need to call home, Mom said. I'm going to try to find a phone.
I nodded, but I was feeling dizzy and sick and only lolled against the planner. I was covered in blood, and my gut was cramping in rhythmic waves that mimicked the earthquake, or maybe the ocean.
My mom came back, looking sick. No answer. And there was nothing to do but wait. Wait while people staggered by, while they tried to drive cars that couldn't go anywhere because the streets were broken into waves, while little kids screamed at the top of their lungs, while the smell of smoke filled the air and increased the darkness, and sirens finally wailed into the space, carrying police and EMTs, who assessed the injuries of the people scattered like more litter around the area. We leaned into each other. I wondered how we'd even get home. It was hours before anyone could clean and stitch up my still bleeding cut. By then I was incoherent with pain and terror, and to this day, I don't remember getting to Eden. A stranger in a Jeep helped us, our good Samaritan. There were no lights as we drove up, only blackness and emptiness where the buildings had once stood. After the long trauma of the day, I couldn't comprehend what I was seeing. And then I did. My heart shattered 1,000 times, over and over and over. I jumped out of the car and screamed, "Kit!" She ran into the light of the headlights, her face a mess of tears and dirt. I hugged her so hard it made my head ache. "Where's your father?" my mother asked. Kit shook her head, pointed. On the beach of the cove were the remains of our house and the restaurant, a wreck of lumber that looked as incoherent as my mother became in seconds. She screamed, and then screamed again, falling to her knees on the rocky ground.
Chapter 30, Kit. Mari picks me up right on the dot of 6. She looks exhausted. "Hey, I brought you coffee. Oh my God, it smells so good. I didn't know how you took it, so I figured milk, and you can add sugar if you like." She points to a thick stack of sugar packets in one of the cup holders. I laugh. "I'm not 8 anymore, you know? Once an addict, always an addict. Takes one to know one." I realize too late that it sounds mean. "Sugar addict, I mean." She glances at me, moving into traffic smoothly. "I get it, and I am the worst. Taste this." I take a sip, and she's right. It's like a milkshake. Too much for me. We ride along in the quiet until I gather my nerve and ask, "How did it go after we left?" She shakes her head, sips her coffee. "Simon is a proud man. He's cut of old school cloth. Men are meant to be men, manly and strong." She sighs. "I have no idea what will happen." For the first time, I reach for her, squeeze her arm. "I'm so sorry for my part in this, Josie." "It's not your fault. None of it. Still, I'm sorry." She nods, changes lanes. "I was going to take you down to Raglan, but the surf forecast for Piha is awesome, and it's not so far. Crazy how you always know now, isn't it? Right? Just call up the reports and Bob's your uncle." I laugh. "What did you just say?" "Bob's your uncle, mate." She laughs. "Best slang in the world, right here." "I get why you love it here. It's amazing." "It is. I'm never leaving." It's an overcast morning, and the traffic is heavy as she makes her way through town. The radio plays a local pop station. Modern top 40 stuff. "When did you start liking pop?" I ask. She was always into the heavy metal bands of the 80s and 90s, Guns N' Roses, Pearl Jam, Nirvana, and the doomed Kurt Cobain. She shrugs, easy in herself, in a way she never was back then. Heavy metal makes too much noise in my head, she says simply. I start disappearing, and then I make bad choices. I nod. What do you like? The same things I always have, really. Easy things to listen to. Her sideways smile is sly. Like flamenco? The word gives me a flash of Javier playing last night, his body and the guitar becoming one thing, lighting every nerve center in my body. I never knew I liked flamenco before, but yeah. How long have you been dating Javier? I laugh slightly. Dating is overstating it a bit. I just met him. What? Yeah, he sat down next to me the first night I got here, at this little Italian place in an alleyway by my apartment, and we struck up a conversation. She's quiet for a minute. It doesn't look like a new relationship. Again, relationship is overstating it. He looks at you like you created the earth and heavens all by yourself. It jolts me. What are you talking about? Are you kidding me? You don't see it? No, I sip my coffee. We've had a great time, but it's just a holiday romance. He lives in Madrid. So you're not that interested? I shrug. I don't really get involved. That's a non-answer. Something in me snaps. Irritably, I say, it's none of your business, actually. You're right. Sorry. The exchange reminds me of the reality here. We can't just pick up our relationship as if nothing has ever happened. I feel myself lifting my shell, protecting myself against her long knowledge of me, her insight into things I work hard never to reveal. Except with Javier. I frown. We head off the highway to a smaller road. At a red light, she looks at me. Have you had a serious relationship, Kit? She knows about James, and maybe she thinks that doesn't count. I sip my coffee, look out the window. Too much drama. Not always. The light turns and she pulls forward. Not every relationship is like our parents. I know. I keep my voice light, unconcerned. But on the sidewalk is a man walking with the same liquid grace that marks Javier's movements. And I'm aware, on some distant plane, of a low yowl of yearning. That, it says. Him. Without rancor, I say, don't try to fix me, okay? I'm fine. I love my job. I have a cat. I have friends and go surfing. Take a lover when I want one. Okay, she shrugs, but I can tell she has more to say. I sigh. Go ahead, say the rest. When I was watching you and Javier last night, I thought about what beautiful children you would have. And suddenly I can see them too. Sturdy little girls and plump little boys, all wearing glasses and collecting rocks and stamps. A welter of tears strikes the backs of my eyes. I have to look away, blink hard. Stop it, Josie, I say quietly. You have what you want, but I don't have to want the same thing you do. Mari, she corrects, and nods. You're right. Sorry. I guess old habits die hard. I've done just fine without you, sis. I guess you have. Wow. I say, as we carry our boards to the beach. Look at those waves. They're rolling home in steady, strong crests. A few riders are on the line, but not as many as would have crowded the ocean in Santa Cruz. Where is everyone? Tourist season is heavy traffic, she says, yanking herself into her wetsuit. A high-end version with turquoise stylings. But the rest of the year, it's pretty mellow. She points out a bunch of cottages scattered on the other side of the road and up the hill. Those are batches, holiday places. It's amazing how many people have them here. She's wearing a t-shirt over a bikini top, and I see her once flat, once tanned abdomen is networked with substantial stretch marks. Not surprising for such a small person.